AM 1290 and 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio WHIO and Sim Trainer Indoor Range and Firearms Training Center present Shooting from the Hip. It's straight talk about firearms, ammunition, self-defense, when and where you can carry, legislation, and legal issues. All about safety, training, and so much more. Your hosts are Jeff Pedro and Mark Avery. Jeff is a 24-year veteran police officer, currently assigned City of Kettering Detective, and owner and lead instructor at Sim Trainer. Mark is a retired Air Force officer, senior staff instructor at Sim Trainer, and NRA-certified instructor in multiple disciplines. They're here to bring to the microphone the truth about guns. Join them by calling 457-1290. Now, Shooting from the Hip. On AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip on this Father's Day weekend. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery. Shooting from the Hip is brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine. That's 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L, real easy to find. You can reach us by phone at 937-293-3914, or you can check us out on the web at www.sim-trainer.com. That's sim-trainer.com. I want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to get on the air today, have any questions, concerns, issues you'd like to talk about, you give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll get you on the air and give you a chance to voice your opinions about whatever issues you have. I want to start off today by just mentioning that this being Father's Day weekend, we're going to be offering a few specials down at the range. For any new member that comes down to the range and purchases either an associate membership, an individual membership, or a family membership, we're going to let them have free use of a firearm on their first visit and a free box of ammunition. So I want to encourage anybody that might be so inclined to come down. Tomorrow would be the day. That'll be either the rest of today or tomorrow. We'll be open from 1 to 5 on Father's Day. Just come on in, indicate that you heard about the special on the radio, and again, we'll get you signed up in a very quick and orderly manner and get you out on the range and get you a range check, and we'll let you use a gun that we think's appropriate for you to use and a free box of ammo. How's that sound, Mark?
Oh, I think Carolyn will probably have her head scrambled by that one if someone shows up this afternoon before we get back from the studio, because we just invented this, so nobody at the range knows about it yet. That's okay. It's not the first time.
Yeah, I want to, going back to last week, there's a couple issues that I just want to talk about. The first is we talked in the last couple of weeks about the state of Ohio and national FOP representatives coming out in opposition of Senate Bill 239. And I want to mention that just this past week, I got my FOP newsletter, and I was quite perturbed to see in there that they listed several of their legislative initiatives, and one of them was to improve the conditions under which retired law enforcement officers and active auxiliary and part-time officers could fall under the standards set by the Leoso law, House Bill 218,
from 2004.
Yeah, from 2004, the law enforcement federal law enforcement officers carry.
Safety Act.
It allows officers to carry firearms pretty much anywhere in the continental United States with very limited restrictions. However, some of the language in the law, like the language in the Ohio concealed carry law, is a little bit vague and ambiguous, and one of the FOP's main legislative initiative was to get that language cleared up. That was one of their initiatives, but yet one of their other initiatives was to oppose Senate Bill 239, and I'm quite concerned about that, and I'm working as diligently as I can to try to get a hold of somebody up there to get them on the air and to get them to give us an explanation, because quite frankly, I've been in law enforcement 25 years. I bend the ears of law enforcement officers on a daily basis, and there simply isn't that kind of opposition out there from the rank and file that at least seemed to be conveyed by the people with the FOP. So I'm going to keep on top of that, because I think it's something we definitely need to get resolved, because like so many other issues relative to concealed carry, there's misinformation, and I think a lot of this is spurned by the misinformation that's getting distributed and just lack of information on the facts. And if you look at the facts, there's really no reason to oppose Senate Bill 239.
Absolutely not.
And I just want to make sure that we get a chance to address that issue.
Well, let's just look at the facts for a few minutes. Senate Bill 239, which currently is stalled in the House, and they've broken out now for the summer, so nothing's going to happen on it until at least the fall. But Senate Bill 239 would allow people who have a license to carry a concealed handgun to legally carry their handgun into a restaurant that serves alcohol as long as they personally don't consume and aren't under the influence, they're not impaired in any way. And it would also change the way that you carry in a vehicle. And right now there are four legal ways for a licensed person to carry in a motor vehicle. You can carry it in a holster on your person. You can carry it in a closed glove compartment or console. You can carry it in a case that's closed but's in plain sight and it has to close with a zipper, snapper, buckle, or something like that. And you can have it in a locked case, and the locked case does not have to be in plain sight. And right now, those are the only four ways that a law-abiding citizen who has a license to carry a concealed handgun that's recognized in Ohio can carry that firearm legally. And that is totally different from most of the other states around us. I mean, no, I don't think there's any other states that have that much of a micromanagement of the way that you carry your firearm. And there's a lot of people that have said, you know, I'd really like to just carry it in my pocket, or I'd like to have a holster that's mounted to my vehicle so that I can have it concealed. It's out of sight from the outside of the vehicle, but it is secure and it's not on my person, so it's not going to be pushing into me. It's going to be more easily accessible. And then I'd be able to have it there in the vehicle when I'm there. And then when I leave the vehicle, I can take it with me, or whatever method they choose to use. But none of those are options right now. So one of the aspects of Senate Bill 239 would be to change that so that there were no more restrictions on carrying a loaded firearm in your vehicle as long as you have a license to carry a concealed handgun. And the other then, of course, is the restaurant carry. And restaurant carry was also addressed in House Bill 203. That bill did get a couple of hearings in the House committee. It languished for some time in the House because there had not been a chairman identified for the committee that needed to hear the testimony about that bill. And then when it finally did get to the point where there was now a Senate bill that covered much of the same ground, it happened so late out of the Senate that the House didn't have time to go through it with the normal procedures, and they chose not to deal with it any other way. So currently there is no concealed carry in a restaurant that serves alcohol. Just so that we're real clear about that, this is something that has been going through the House and has a lot of support in both the House and the Senate. If it gets a vote, it will almost certainly get passed, and Governor Strickland has said he would sign it, but it just did never get to that point. So just so that everybody's clear on that, there is not yet the ability for a law-abiding citizen to carry a firearm into a restaurant that serves alcohol.
Yeah, and that again goes back to my earlier point. We talked about 2 weeks ago that law enforcement officers had some issues carrying guns inside restaurants. But remember, the one thing that is critical here is that the current language in the law says that private citizens would, if the law would pass, be able to carry their gun as long as they're not consuming alcohol. And that's the main intention there, is they're going to be able to go into places where they're just as vulnerable, restaurants that just happen to serve alcoholic beverages, and not have to go through the painstakingly difficult and ridiculous process of disarming when they get out of their car to go into the restaurant and then coming back out and then having to rearm. And some of the ridiculous reasons in opposition just don't hold any weight. And
well, they especially don't hold weight when you recognize what the text of the law actually says. Every time somebody opposes this bill in one of the media outlets around the state, you hear, well, guns and alcohol don't mix. Well, I kind of agree that guns and alcohol don't mix, so keep your gun out of your drink and it'll taste better.
Well, and the other reason there, you're talking responsible, law-abiding citizens, and when they're responsible in one area, they tend to be responsible in all areas of their life, and that's just it's kind of slap in their face to put these kind of undue restrictions.
It absolutely does. Let's go ahead and take our first break for the hour. We will be back in just a few minutes after these words from our sponsors. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer. Also want to remind our listeners that we're going to have a special tomorrow for any new member that comes down to the range and purchases either an individual, family, or associate membership. You'll receive a free use of firearm and a box of ammunition to get you started in the shooting sports. I also want to let people remind our listeners to the fact that the Middletown Sportsman's Club is continuing with their weekly youth skeet program from 2 to 5 on Sunday, every Sunday between now and July 18th, exclusive of the 4th of July weekend, which will be July 3rd. That's the only weekend they will not run the program. It runs on Sundays from 2 to 5 p.m. That's located at the Middletown Sportsman's Club at 6943 Michael Road in Middletown. And the number to reach somebody, you can get a hold of Mike Erter at 513-422-5112. Again, that's 513-422-5112. And I want to remind you that I took my son out there. He's 13 years old. First time he'd ever put a shotgun in his hand. He went through the training course over on the training range, and he shot about 40 or 50 rounds. And we weren't done yet, so I thought that I'd introduce him to trap, and I brought him over to the trap range, and the little booger outshot me. He got 19 of the pigeons, and I only got 17, so he did a great job. It was a lot of fun, and he can't wait to go back again.
That's a super deal. And quite frankly, this is a great weekend to do it. Guys, if dads, if you have not taken your kids out and taught them how to shoot, or, you know, sons and daughters, if your dad happened to, maybe you're not living at home anymore, and this might be a great thing, you know, to go out and take your dad out to the range and just get some time together and make some noise and put some holes in paper or break some clays. It's a great way to do it. All that information, by the way, about the Middletown Sportsman's Club is linked to our website. If you go to sim-trainer.com, you look at the show notes for last week, 612, you'll see the link for the Middletown Sportsman's Club, the phone number, the dates, and all that information. So all that's available right there, and there's also a link to the Sportsman's Club page that has their address and all the information about how to get down there.
I'll just remind everybody that it is free of charge, and they provide everything. Absolutely. The ammunition, they'll let you use a gun. If you have your own shotgun that you'd like to bring, they'll certainly let you use that if you're capable of functioning the operation. However, they'll get you into something that the kid can use and shoot very well. And like I told you, he was Daniel, 13 years old, was a little bit apprehensive initially. He got into it after about the second or third relay, and he was hitting pigeons, hitting clay birds pretty regularly. And then, like I told you, he took dad to task.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. So I think he's probably looking to do that again, is he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. That's a great opportunity. And unfortunately, all too many people, I certainly didn't grow up shooting shotguns. I've since learned how to do it, and I'm now an NRA certified shotgun instructor as well. And I enjoy doing it. It's a lot of fun. We went down there a couple of times last year and participated in some of the activities at the Middletown Sportsman's Club. Great outfit. They do a great job. And particularly this youth skeet program, they just really do a super job in getting folks introduced to the shotgunning sports. It's an outstanding opportunity. We have some information about Father's Day. You know, maybe you don't realize when Father's Day has been. This is actually the 100th anniversary of Father's Day. It was first celebrated on the third Sunday in June in 1910. And the original observance was in honor of William Jackson Smart, who was an Arkansas veteran of the war between the states. And he'd raised a daughter and five sons on his own since his wife had died giving birth to their sixth child. He was devoted to his children as they were to him, and it was his daughter, Sonora Smart Dodd, who wanted to honor her father for that devotion. And Mother's Day had been observed for some time in one form or another, probably for centuries. And she thought that Father's Day was the right thing to do. So I tend to agree with her. And I'm give a shout out to my dad, who fortunately is still with us. And he's out in Arizona. I don't know whether he's actually listening to the show now, but he will be listening to it at some point because he has the internet connectivity. And I know my mom is usually listening to the show as well as are several other people. So if there's somebody who's a long ways from Dayton and you'd still like to be part of the show, you can call us at 937-457-1290, and you can get on the air. Those in the Dayton area, 457-1290. We do have some lines open. So if you'd like to get on the air, ask a question. Maybe you have a comment about Senate Bill 203 or the Senate Bill 239 or House Bill 203, restaurant carry, or the changes in the way that you can carry in a vehicle, some of the things that have been going on, some of the other things that might be going on, perhaps at the national level. Maybe you're interested in the firearms convention. That's the activities that are going on at the UN, and there certainly have been some interesting emails that have been going on about that. Some of them are more true than others. We like to make sure that we have all the facts on those things before we make a statement, and we do have quite a bit of that information. The National Rifle Association has put out a statement saying, you know, that email that's been going around, not quite all the facts are correct. So if you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make, give us a call at 457-1290. Jeff?
Last week there was a caller that we didn't quite get the answer to his question on the air, but he was concerned about how he's going to take care of a felony conviction in conjunction with acquiring a CHL. And I just want to remind our listeners that basically the easiest way to take care of that is you're going to have to get an attorney and get the felony conviction expunged. And it is a process that is going to require an attorney. It's not something that an individual can do on their own. It's going to cost a little bit of money, but considering the value of getting that off your record, it may be well worth the investment and getting that taken care of. I happen to have a nephew who got, when he was in college, doing the stupid thing that college kids do. He was in a drive-through of a local restaurant and got into a verbal altercation that ultimately resulted in a physical altercation between he and one of the workers inside the restaurant, and it resulted during the physical altercation, the kid on the other end of it ended up with a broken cheekbone, and my nephew got charged with felonious assault.
Ouch.
And as a result, he was an avid hunter up to that point and got convicted, or actually pled guilty to the charge in arrangements or in conjunction with the plea bargain, and he had that felony on his record, and he's going through the process of getting that expunged so that he can possess a firearm in the future. But it is a painstakingly time-consuming process, but it does require the intervention of an attorney.
Yeah, it really does. And, of course, we do have one attorney who's a sponsor of our show. That would be Steve Pearson. His phone number is 937-299-2995, and he would be more than willing to talk to you and find and give you some more information as to what it would take in order to get that process at least started. And it's not a guaranteed process. There's no certainty that you'd necessarily be able to get it expunged. But frankly, the cleaner your record has been since that point, and the longer it's been since that point, the more justification you have to say, look, that was a mistake, or it was, this was another person. I've changed a lot since then. And if that's the only one on your record, one of the requirements is it can only happen once. It can only happen one time. You can only have one expungement, and it can only be for one offense. So beyond that, if you have more than one, unfortunately, right now there's no way around that. And with the federal law, firearms law being the way it is, if you have a felony on your record, that felony is permanent, and your right to keep and bear arms has been lost for the rest of your life. And I personally have a problem with that. I know that I've seen a lot of people who have changed, and I think that we have, based on a Judeo-Christian foundation in our country, and we have an awful lot of understanding of what it means to be forgiven. And unfortunately, our government, federal government, and the federal firearms law doesn't recognize that, doesn't take that into account. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be going over to the news center, and we'll be back after the break. Give us a call at 457-1290 if you'd like to ask a question, get on the air. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRAnews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Thanks very much, Cam. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and let's go right out to the phones. We haven't done that yet today. Let's talk to Troy in Dayton, who's calling us on a cell phone. Troy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question is, I'm a formerly licensed Ohio peace officer. I'm not retired. I spent some time on a department. But how does that translate to the current concealed carry law? Is there any provision for somebody in that position?
Well, Troy, relative to law enforcement officers, the current language is 15 years of service in order to satisfy the requirement. The recommendation for the new revision is 10-year minimum full-time status law enforcement officer. So I don't know what your capacity was. If you were only on as a part-time, you would meet the requirement even if you had extended stay. Although the new language in the law is going to try, they're going to try to address some of those issues with part-timers and auxiliaries, but it's more in their active status versus retired status. Now, relative to civilian concealed carry, you would fall into the same provisions of any other individual. You'd have to take the required training or demonstrate that you have the required proficiency, and then fill out an application at your local sheriff's department and get your permit that way, and then it would be subject to the same restrictions as civilian concealed holder license.
How long has it been since you've had since you were on the police force?
Been about 8 years.
Okay, see, 6 years is the cutoff for certification based on other training. So like military, for example, when the military, if they've had a handgun qualification, they can submit that training, but it has to be within 6 years. So in your case, you'd be past that, and you'd be able to go through the standard concealed carry course and apply for an application, apply for a license just as anyone else would.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Lynn in Dayton. Lynn, welcome to the show.
A couple questions.
Okay.
Some time ago, I seen a guy get hit by a car, and so I'm first aid qualified, CPR qualified. I stopped my car, moved it to the side, and I started helping the guy. I dialed 911 on my cell phone. Unbeknownst to me, two police officers arrived first on the scene. I was so involved with helping this guy, putting I took a blanket out of my trunk and all that, and then finally the ambulance arrived, and I realized after I got back in my car, all the first responders was there, the firemen, paramedics, and what have you. I got back in my car and took off, and I said, should I have told them I was armed? I think I should have. But in that situation, I just wasn't thinking. So what would you suggest in the future?
Well, obviously the law requires you to, but again, rational, reasonable decision-making should prevail. And in a situation like that where you were a citizen who chose to get involved in a serious incident and get involved, I can't imagine any police officer in the right mind going ahead and giving you a problem. That being said, if there's a case that I'm aware of where an individual was in a similar situation and didn't notify, and the officer just brought it to his attention when he happened to see the shadow of his or the imprint of his gun on his shirt, that he was required to notify the law enforcement officer that he was armed, and the man simply said, look, I was so wrapped up and so stressed out in the situation I was in, I just forgot. The officer understood that and just brought it to his attention. So I would hope that that would be the case out there, because you're a law-abiding citizen doing a good deed.
Okay. Another situation, this business I've been at the grocery store attending, going there for like 2 years, and I finally saw in the parking lot, it's a plethora of businesses there, in the parking lot they have a sign, no firearm. Does that mean I don't bring the firearm on the parking lot? Because none of the businesses has it posted. And it's well over 15 businesses there, but they're not. There's no posting of signs. So that's where, through the years, I've just been looking at the businesses and looking for no firearm or whatever. But I finally noticed one in the parking lot saying no firearm. So am I allowed to drive on the parking lot, put my weapon in my glove compartment or something, secure it, and then go into the businesses? Or
let's take that one step at a time.
Okay.
Here, the law changed in November of 2008, and it actually changed partly as a request by business owners who said, our insurance companies are forcing us to post these signs, and if we don't post the sign, then they won't cover us or they'll change our rates. And so they don't really want to post the signs, but their insurance companies force them to. So the legislature said, well, hey, we can help with that. So we'll just say that the signs that are posted at the parking lot no longer carry a criminal offense. In other words, you can't be charged criminally for taking your firearm past that sign and staying in the parking lot.
Okay.
So that changed. It's now if somebody wanted to make an issue of it, they would have to sue you. They would have to charge you civilly, and there would be no criminal charge.
Okay.
Now, if you have a sign on a building, the sign on the building does carry the force of law, and going past that sign is criminal trespass.
Exactly.
So that's a misdemeanor, and that would be then more of a problem. So in direct answer to what you said, yes, it is not a crime in any way for you to drive onto the parking lot and then lock your handgun in the vehicle.
Okay. Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for calling the show. We always appreciate having folks come in with good questions, and that was certainly a good one. Let's talk to Ed in Kettering.
Ed, yes, hello.
Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I've seen on the internet that the NRA has gotten into a free speech situation. Are you up to date with that information?
Yeah, you're talking about disclose bill?
Yes.
Okay. What do you have a particular comment or question about that?
Well, other than what the deal that they're trying to make is it going to bother us? Is it going to hurt us as far as gun carry? As far as our regular liberties and availability for free speech?
Well, the deal that they're trying to make is to limit the impact of that bill. And let me just give all the listeners a quick summary of what the bill is. Actually, we're going to need to take a break here in just a minute or so.
Fine.
So how about if I get started with that, and then if you just hang on the line, and we'll come back and finish up after the break. Is that okay?
Very good.
The bill itself would be actually much more draconian in the restrictions on free speech than even the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, which is also known as McCain-Feingold. And the way that changed things, some of that has been overturned. The Supreme Court has finally ruled correctly that bill, there's portions of it that are unconstitutional. I think the whole thing was unconstitutional, and they dropped the ball on that one. And basically what they're doing is they're putting an exclusion in for any organization with more than 1 million members. And that was something that was done because the NRA was going hard against that bill, and those people in Congress who wanted to force it through required that was what they were trying to do, was force it through, and they knew that they'd never be able to get it done over the objection of the NRA. So that was what that is, and we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back from this break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. Let's go back out and talk to Ed in Kettering. And we just before the break, we were talking about the Disclose Act and the NRA's position on that. Ed, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
The NRA has several statements about the Disclose Act, and they clearly oppose the Disclose Act in all its forms. There has been some misrepresentation or at least misunderstanding as to what the Disclose Act and the NRA's position on it would be. They never said they would support any version of the bill. The young lady who did the liner right before this segment of the show, Rachel Parsons, I communicated with her during the week and asked her some questions about that. She says clearly that the NRA is still opposed to the bill, and they really, you know, the bill itself would do some horrible things. First, it would require that any election-related ads or mailings would have to include donor lists. They would have to turn top donor lists over to the federal government. They clearly don't think that providing donor lists of the membership of the NRA over to the federal government, and there's no way in the world they're ever going to do that. The bill would have also prohibited political speech by all federal government contractors. So any contractor that has a contract with the federal government, no matter what else they do, they wouldn't be able to, they would not be able to have any political speech. They would not be able to sponsor commercials and oppose things in the public arena, inform the public about things that were wrong and that, that were bad during in a pending legislation during an election. So there's an awful lot of things about it. The NRA general statement is that they do not support it. There are responses from President David Keene, from NRA ILA, Institute for Legislative Action Director, Executive Director Chris Cox, and also from Wayne LaPierre. So there are several of these letters and statements on the NRA ILA website, and we'll have a link to that. There are links to it on our website, and we'll have another link to it with the show notes for this show. So I really don't think that it's something that's going to happen. In fact, the more that they may have found, they may have made a mistake by giving this exemption to the NRA, because that's raised a lot of people's attention. And frankly, it has made people who were in favor of the bill, who really want to restrict your right to speak freely.
Yep.
And they're saying, well, then if the NRA isn't going to be blocked, and they're the folks we really did want to block, that's the, those wild-eyed radicals. So we don't think that this bill is going to go through. There's a lot of people that are believing now that the more people learn about it, the less likely it is to go through. It was clearly a progressivist attack on the freedom of speech, on the First Amendment.
I'm glad you I'm glad they got the big guns out doing that kind of stuff, so to speak, for taking care of that. And I appreciate the information that you've given me. I appreciate what you guys are doing, and I thank you very much for it. In traveling with a weapon, what's the best way to keep in touch with the most recent laws, changes, so forth, as far as traveling with a weapon?
You're talking about going between different states?
Yeah. Is it internet or strictly to the state, or what's the best way there?
Well, I think the internet is a great source. There are some great places like handgunlaw.us, the U.S. Concealed Carry Association, carryconcealed.net, but all of those people will tend to lag behind whatever the states are doing. And I think the best thing about those sites is that most of them give you a link to the state information. Whenever I travel to a state, I always look up the concealed carry law on the state's own website, read the law in the state's revised code, and then make sure that I know what the requirements are so that I can follow. I definitely don't want to accidentally commit some sort of a violation, maybe something that is the functional equivalent of the felony existence while armed.
Yeah, well, I'm saying I didn't know doesn't always get it.
No, in fact, it pretty much always doesn't get it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out to Art in Fairborn. Art, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you today?
Hey, we're doing great. What's your question?
I had purchased a handgun in the past, bought it from a gun dealer, so it certainly is in my name. Interested in selling it and want to make sure how I get it out of my name.
Well, what are you going to – you can sell it to any private individual, and you don't have to worry about transfer, paperwork, anything of that nature. The only thing I recommend is that the law basically requires that you exercise reasonableness in who you sell it to. Obviously, if you know that the individual you're going to sell it to is a convicted felon or falls under one of the other restrictions that would prohibit him or her to have a firearm, then you would have an obligation not to sell it. But other than that, if it's a law-abiding citizen, you're not going to have any restrictions on who you can sell the gun to.
I think it's important to note that even though you may have gone through a background check and the dealer that you purchased it from has a record of that sale, the gun isn't registered. It's not. There's no place. There's no. Certainly no Ohio registry. There's no U.S. registry that says here's the gun, here's the part number, the serial number, the manufacturer, and here's the owner and the owner's address and the owner's Social Security number. That information is not collected anywhere.
I'm surprised. I thought that it was.
Well, it's not collected, but I will just tell you from the law enforcement perspective that, because I've been involved in the investigation in a couple of cases, if in fact you sell it to a third party and that individual commits a criminal act or they sell it to another person or it's stolen in the commission of a crime and then the law enforcement officers come in contact with it, there is a way they can trace it back to the original sale that was made to you through the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And but that's no big deal, because then what they'll do, they'll just contact you and ask who you got rid of it to or who you sold it to, and that will help them in their investigation. But there's no, like Mark said, there's no federal registry where anybody could have access to this. It would only be accessible in investigation of a crime involving that particular weapon.
Excellent.
And in fact, there's no federal or state registry in Ohio. There are some states that do have registries, but Ohio's not one of them.
All right. That's what I needed to know. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks very much for calling the show. We really appreciate it.
I want to remind our listeners that we just received our second shipment of Crossbreed holsters, the inside-the-belt Super Tuck holsters, and the second shipment, already half of them are claimed, and we have a good stock and supply for a variety of the more common concealed carry guns. And Mark was one of the people who early on said this was a good product. I was pretty much against inside-the-waistband holsters until this product came out on the line and or out on the market, and I want to encourage you to get in and take a peek and see if it's something that can help you, because with the weather changing, it's getting harder and harder for people to conceal weapons with light clothing. But the Super Tuck inside the waistband holster solves that problem. It carries a lifetime guarantee, and they will send it. You're able to send it back if there's a problem, and they'll take care of it. And the unfortunate reality is, if you need one that we don't have in stock, we're one of the few dealers in the area. It takes about 4 to 6 weeks because they are custom made. They're custom made to your order for the respective gun that you're wanting to use it for. And they've been pretty good at getting it out at right about around four weeks and turning them around pretty quickly. It's a good product.
For those people who have a gun, particularly an odd gun, that maybe you don't get find holsters for it regularly stocked in most places. Obviously, you won't probably find it at SimTrainer either. But I'll say one thing about the Crossbreed holsters, and that is that they really are custom fit to your gun. So if you get a gun that's a holster that's a generic, fits any sort of medium frame semi-automatic, probably that's not going to work as well as something that's tailor-made for that specific model of gun. And clearly the Crossbreed holsters do that. Well, there's the music. And so that means we are out of time for this week on SimTrainer's Shooting from the Hip. We thank you all for joining us. Don't forget to say something nice to your father this weekend. Call him up if you haven't talked to him for a while. Take him to the range. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.